major contributor to oops. There we go. So trees are a major contributor to the quality of life that we enjoy here in Bloomington, and it's really easy to take them for granted. But unfortunately, tree canopy in Bloomington is decreasing from issues related to age, development, climate change, pests and diseases. So we have an interest in continuing to protect already established trees to maximize their life expectancy, plant a diversity of species so that one pest doesn't wipe out too many trees, and plant species that will be suitable to our changing climate, which is getting warmer and wetter. And to truly reap the benefits of trees, we have to do a lot more than just plant more of them. They have to be maintained, especially within the first 3 years of their life that they're planted in the ground. And this is a huge job that the city could really benefit from help with, especially since a large portion of our urban forest is outside of their jurisdiction. So it requires all of our involvement. So our mission at Canopy Bloomington is one, to maximize and sustainably manage Bloomington's urban forests for the many benefits that trees provide, and two, to focus on tree equity and community engagement, which means making sure that we plant and maintain as many trees as we can, but especially in areas that lack equity so that everyone in Bloomington can reap the benefits that trees provide. And we'll be able to do this by building a robust network of volunteers and youth tree tenders to care for both public and private trees. So why should we care about Bloomington's urban forests? Trees provide quantifiable and unquantifiable benefits to us at various scales within our community. There are four broad categories of tree benefits, and those are health, environmental, social, and economic. And some examples of these benefits are stormwater management, reducing temperature and providing shade, minimizing health concerns related to heat and poor air quality, lower energy costs, and improving people's mood and lessening stress, among many other benefits. And because of these benefits, trees are one of the keys to creating thriving and healthy communities. But to sustain these benefits, young trees need watered, mulched, and pruned. And older trees need large limbs removed and eventually have to come down. So it's critical that we think ahead and strategically about continuously planting trees of different species so that we have trees at all stages of life. The benefits that trees provide also depends heavily on the tree's age, species, size, and especially the maintenance that's provided to them throughout their lifespan. And we also have an interest in sustaining these benefits over space and over time. So just because our urban forest may look really great right now doesn't automatically mean that it will in the future. So we need to replace trees before and after other trees die so that there's always trees reaching maturity. We have an interest in maximizing the number of trees in this mature age class that you can see here on this graph here, because that's when trees provide the most benefits. And we can ensure that by caring for trees properly when they're young. Young trees do take an initial investment. They're pretty expensive, they're labor intensive, but they'll return that investment plus much more once they mature and they don't require as much maintenance. Just to give a really quick overview of the state of Bloomington's urban forests, we use Bloomington's 2019 tree canopy assessment report prepared by Davie Resource Group for the city as a roadmap for our work. They found that Bloomington's overall canopy cover, so across public and private land, has a potential to grow by 23%. But our canopy cover has decreased over the past 10 years, especially on residential properties that the city can't have any impact on without the cooperation of homeowners, landlords, and organizations such as ourselves. The canopy in Bloomington also provides around $2 million in economic benefits to the city on an annual basis, through things like stormwater management, energy savings, and carbon sequestration. And even so, that number still leaves out the aesthetic value that our trees provide and additional benefits like mental health relief that we can't really place a quantifiable number on. And as I mentioned before, the healthier and more mature an urban forest is, the more benefits it can provide. And Davie Resource Group found that Bloomington's canopy cover overall is in fair to good health. So there's a little room for improvement to make sure our forest is resilient for generations to come, but it takes people who care and can act now to ensure that fact. And additionally, we want to make sure that the benefits of our forests are equitably distributed across Bloomington. And that's an effort that we particularly want to focus on in our mission. So what is tree equity? Tree equity ensures that all people in a community have enough trees and tree canopy to provide adequate benefits that trees provide. So those social, environmental, health, and economic benefits. And an inequitable distribution of trees in a community can actually exacerbate social inequities. American Forest came out with this tool that you see mapped here on the screen called a tree equity score, which looks at factors like income, current canopy, heat index, among some other factors to calculate a single score out of 100, both at the municipal level and at the block group level. So Bloomington has a good average score of 84, but if you look at the map here, there are some block groups that fall well below that. And it'll take around 50,000 trees just to bring these areas up to the average, let alone raise the average. So that's a large investment of both time and money. So we are starting small with our organization. By prioritizing planting in under-canopied neighborhoods and residential areas. And we can do this by reaching out to the neighborhood associations and community leaders within those areas to gauge interest in a planting event and ensuring that our planting events have an educational lens to teach residents about tree care and tree benefits. And also making sure that we only plant what we know that we'll be able to take care for or take care of because of that investment of time that young trees need to make sure that they can grow and thrive into long-lived mature trees. To help us with this, there is a lot of potential in terms of partnering with other organizations that are already established in Bloomington. And we're constantly thinking of ways that we can collaborate with others in the community that have shared goals, especially. This past April, we collaborated with the Neighborhood Planting Project on a really fun tree-filled day where they hosted their annual giveaway of fruit tree saplings and invited us to do residential plantings on the same day. And it demonstrated how coming together with already established organizations in Bloomington can really help maximize our efforts and be mutually beneficial. In addition to pursuing more residential tree plantings where we'll plant across multiple properties within a neighborhood, we also have an interest in planting more trees in community meeting spaces within residential areas, such as churches, schools, and other nonprofit and business buildings that generally have large lawns with ample tree space. We're also launching a pilot program for our Youth Tree Tenders program, which will provide paid summer employment opportunities for high school kids to engage in tree planting and care, environmental education, and gain other life enrichment skills. This program was generously funded in part by the Community Foundation, and we're excited that we'll be in partnership with the City of Bloomington's Park and Recreation Department doing tree care work in Switchyard Park. We've been working really hard towards developing this idea into a well-rounded and green career-focused program. So we're really excited to start it with the four high school students that we just hired on. We have some additional partnerships in the works with MC Iris, Monroe County Identify and Reduce Invasive Species on their Reduce Calorie Pear initiative. We created a reporting form for them that folks can use to report the locations of either escaped invasions of calorie pear or calorie pears outside of the city limits that weren't caught in the city inventory. We also are working with Sycamore Land Trust. We'll be working with them in the fall on doing some tree plantings on school grounds. So we're really excited for that as well. And through all these efforts, it's really important for us to educate Bloomington residents and businesses about trees, like why they're important, why they're beneficial, how and where to plant them, how to prune and water them correctly, and just general best practices with tree care. So if you're interested in hosting a tree planting event in your neighborhood with us, or are just interested in having us talk to you about tree care and education, we would love to speak at your neighborhood association meeting. You can reach out to us through our email here. We also have a website and social media, so you can follow us on there for updates of volunteer opportunities and ways to get involved with us. So I can take any questions if there are any right now. I don't know if we're waiting for after Aaron's presentation, but I'm happy to answer anything.
No, it's fine. And thank you so much. And I wanted to say, I first heard about you guys. I went to a presentation at the public library, mm-hmm. and it was so informative on how to take care of trees. And I learned so much. So I don't know if there's on your website, you probably have resources and things like that for.
Yes, we do. Yeah, we do have some resources on tree planting and tree pruning. And then we will be continuing to do educational presentations like that, like through the library and at other places in town where we can help people learn how to care for trees at home.
And at the Maple Heights event, about how many trees do you think that you helped people plant in their yards?
So at the Maple Heights event, we planted 20 trees across various homes, and we also partnered with some apartment complexes in there as well.
Oh, that's really good. Hi, Nancy?
Yeah.
You're muted, Nancy.
How are you funded?
So we are funded through grants mostly right now, and also generous anonymous gifts that we've received. So that's how we're funded right now.
Okay.
I have a question. About, I think it was the last chart you might have presented before you got into it was right before the photographs of planting trees, and I tried to stop you, but I was muted.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, it's all right. I was hoping you might be able to bring that up and interpret it for me, because I studied it and I go. But
this one right here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are we looking at there?
Sure. Sorry, I should have explained that. So this is a map that this is city data that we have hosted on our website right now. So there's a map that you can use to explore it a little bit more. But so this shows the map of the neighborhood associations in Bloomington that were included in the canopy assessment. Mm-hmm. So the image on the right shows the canopy percent, the current canopy percent, current 2018 from the last assessment, mm-hmm. Where the darker green is higher canopy neighborhoods and the lighter green is lower canopy neighborhoods. And then the graph to the right of that is the change in canopy cover from 2008 to 2018. So the more orange neighborhoods are neighborhoods that experienced a larger loss in canopy over that decade. And the green ones experienced either a lesser decline or an increase in canopy cover.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I just, you know, thought they made nice wallpaper patterns. But
yeah, sorry, I should have explained that.
It's all right.
Thanks for catching me.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
And Linda, who is not Linda, has his hand up.
Sure.
You're muted. Oh, you're muted. We can't hear you.
How about now?
Yes.
Yay. All right, I did it. Yeah. Oh, well, I had two questions for Hannah. One of them is, because I really like this tree planting thing that you're doing. And we're in a project right now out at Griffey where we're supposed to be taking out these invasives. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that's so frustrating is if we don't get something down there.
They grow right back. Yeah.
They grow, and we've found a way with these Maddox axes to pull out the ABH right from the roots, and you can really pull it out, and we can do it fast. But we've got a vacuum out there. We've got nothing to throw down. Do you guys have a resource or something where we can we've been thinking about this, you know, hack and plant, you know, where you hack out the invasives and plant something in. And is that something that I should be looking to you for a resource or to try and, you know, just anything to put in there? so it doesn't grow back?
So right now we're limiting our tree plantings to urban areas. We haven't expanded to natural areas yet, such as Griffey. Generally with reforestation efforts like that, generally people plant like smaller saplings and things. And we plant trees that are like around 6 to 7 foot tall already. Are you involved with MC Iris Monroe County?
Yeah, that's who's sponsoring us. And,
oh, okay.
And right now we can't do anything because they're spraying till May 25th to put anything out there. But yeah, they've turned us on to some of the trees. It's just, these are getting really, I mean, these are huge areas that were gaping open.
Yeah.
Anything, you know, that could stop that. So I'll look to them then, I guess.
Sometimes some organizations like Oiko Habitats or local restoration company. They have recently been doing some large like reforestation efforts, and they a lot of times have saplings left over. Also just looking out for saplings that are left over from projects like that. I know that the Monroe County Soil and Water Conservation District, they sometimes have leftover tree saplings available. I've dropped some off for them before, so they might also be a good resource.
Okay. Hey, I have one other question, and this is just an opinion question for you. There's no right or wrong answer, but we've been out there at Griffey, and we noticed that there's so many vines. You're talking about the health of the trees. A lot of times there's a lot of vines on these trees, and it really knocks the, you can see them, you know, being attacked by the trees, about attacked by the vines. And there's such a discrepancy as far as opinion as to what to do with that. Do you see that too? And what do you have an opinion? And you know, again, there's no right or wrong answer. I'm just collecting opinions.
So Erin might have a better opinion on that because she's more well-versed in like more arboriculture things.
Want me to save it for her then?
Yeah, I mean, Erin, would you like to take that question? Is that, you probably deal with that more than I do.
I'm gonna apologize. I was typing up a answer in the chat about locating.
Oh, sorry.
Can you repeat the question?
Oh, the question was, is that, and it's an opinion question. We've been out at Griffey for a while, and some of the trees in the forest I have a health problem because there's so many vines on top of them. And they're taking some of the trees down. And there's such a wide variety of opinion from different people as to whether the vine should be there or not. And I wasn't sure if you had an opinion and what yours was. I'm just collecting opinions.
I think that really depends on the type of vine. Like obviously if it's an invasive or something like that, then that should be removed. There is kind of like a, I guess, tipping point, a pressure point on how much is this vine interacting with this tree? Is this vine interacting simply because it needs a place to grow? Or is this interacting because there's some existing stressor on that tree? And this is a secondary stressor that's actually then growing on this tree. So you kind of need to know what kind of vines are we dealing with? And also what's the overall health of the tree? That being said, if you do have a large amount of vines, depending on the type, depending on the way it grows, it can be a negative to that tree through basically restricting flow or movement of nutrients, water in that tree. But it really depends from tree to tree, from vine to vine. It really is a case by case basis.
Yeah. And you know, the other one too with those vines is sails. These winds come up and those vines act as sails, and just the tree can't handle it and just knocks it down. You know, it's just amazing what those vines are able to do. But anyway, I don't want to take up any more time. I appreciate you gave me your opinion.
I have a vine opinion though, because in my neighborhood park, people cut down a lot of the vines, including all the native grapevines. And this was the first fall. I didn't see any like ducks stopping along the trail there on the way, and it made me really sad. So I don't know. That's my opinion about grapevines, that they're good.
Yeah. Well, I got two opinions today then.
Anyway. So Erin, are you ready? Would you like to go?
I had a couple things.
Oh, sorry, Steve.
And John does too.
Oh, sorry.
But John's muted. Okay. I'll go ahead and go. One thing that I heard early on was that the biggest loss of trees is on private property. Is that what you said?
Yes.
Okay. And I'm wondering, and I've heard that you have to apply to remove a tree or something like that here in Bloomington. Is that true?
So,
or should you apply to remove a tree?
So can I actually answer this one?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Okay. So, if it's a tree on private property, for the most part, no. There are a few exceptions there. So the exceptions are if perhaps when your area was originally platted, split up into parcels. So there are some areas in which various types of easements, such as tree preservation easements, or sometimes other environmental easements are placed on the property. These are typically on the back of the property in well-wooded area. And those are areas that do have restrictions on tree removal. And that's something that you'd contact the planning department. Usually what that's restricted to is trees over 6 inches that are non-invasive. And you would have to contact the planning department because that's overseen by them when that parcel was put into existence. And yeah, restricted to things that are dead, dying, or potentially dangerous. The other kind of exceptions are there are some historic districts or even singular homes that are considered their own standalone historic district here in Bloomington that have placed an additional restriction on themselves, where that limits the ability to remove without having some sort of certificate of appropriateness. And that is put in front of typically the, what's the name? Historic Preservation Commission. And that's who would kind of oversee that. And that's through the HAND, Housing and Neighborhood Development Department. But outside of those exceptions, typically for private property trees, there are no restrictions for removal. That being said, if it's a tree that's considered a city tree, if it's within the public right of way, then you are supposed to apply for a tree work permit to remove that tree.
Oh, well, thank you very much. So I guess that means that any contractors or people that are doing, you know, like clearing land and things like that, that they have to consider those circumstances before they do such a thing, right?
They should.
Yeah. Yes, they should. Absolutely. And I'll ask another question before I pass it off to John. So the additional partnerships that you mentioned with different neighborhood associations, I would be interested to see a list of those, because we're reaching out to a lot of these folks right now. And I would like to know which additional partnerships you've developed so far, so that I can say, hey, Sycamore Knolls is doing this, and it would be an opportunity for you.
That would be great. So right now we've really made a lot of connections with, you know, like the larger organizations like Sycamore, the Neighborhood Planting Project, MC Iris. We've made some connections with the Monroe County School System. So larger organizations in the community. And we are looking for like smaller localized projects that we might not be aware of, that maybe only the neighborhood association or folks in living in a neighborhood know of, you know, a community space that needs like revitalization in their neighborhood. So yeah, I'd love to connect with you if you know of any like small localized efforts that we could help with.
Yeah, I'd love to get that out there.
Yeah, if you want to drop your email, or if you want to email our hello inbox, just that that it's hello@canopybloomington.org. Okay. We can have a chat about that. John, I can take your question.
Okay. Hi, John Lawrence. I'm from Bryan Park. Thank you for this great presentation, by the way. I was a little surprised to hear you say that trees are controlled by HPC, Historic Preservation Commission. My wife, Jan Sorby over here, who's the more historic HPC person, centric person than me, her eyebrows went up, and mine too, that I've never heard of HPC getting involved in trees, but that we may be wrong about that. But back to the issue at hand, I know that the city is involved in an urban tree project, and I was kind of curious, what is the connection between the two? That I might ask another question after you answer that. Thanks.
So I'm guessing that Erin will probably cover the ongoing project by the city in her presentation. So if we want to table that question and then Erin can talk about it through a presentation, then we can come back to it if that works for you, John.
Sure.
I think there is some process for making actually a tree historic that I learned from Canopy thing, that you can do that.
Oh yeah, I think Rob talked about that.
Yeah. And did some, one more person have their hand up? My screen was cutting off and I didn't see people's hands up. So now John, and you okay. So I think everybody's.
And I'll just say that my experience with HBC is that they really only care about the front of the house. So anyway, for the most part.
So the exception is Elm Heights is the one I know of. And they have something within their regulations that essentially dictates trees that are visible from the property, from the front of the property. That is mainly the neighborhood that I've had to deal with this. Most other historic ones don't have this, but that's the one where it has come up a few times since the start of my job.
I think when neighborhoods create historic neighborhoods, they often write their own guidelines. And so Elm Heights must have written into their guidelines, we want to protect trees. Because I know there was a big issue between trees and solar panels. So.
Okay. Well, Erin, it's all yours now.
But Erin, you're muted.
Thank you. So my name is Erin Hatch. I'm the urban forester with the city of Bloomington. I operate out of the Parks and Recreation Department. So today I'm going to talk a little bit about what the city of Bloomington as the government here locally does in terms of managing trees, and also talk about two of the kind of projects and most, I guess, asked about topics that have been coming up this year in regards to urban trees. So Hannah talked a little bit about the various types of information that the city of Bloomington has in regards to our trees. In 2019, the Urban Forestry Program paid to have a consultant, Digby Resource Group, evaluate our trees two different ways. One was having an urban tree canopy assessment report done, which was looking at the overall canopy in Bloomington, both on private property and on public property. And they kind of parse this out in a few different ways. The image I have is essentially the same image that Hannah had. This is pulled from the canopy assessment report. And this is about canopy percentage at various neighborhood association levels. In that report, they have, you know, it's split out by zoning types, split out by council districts. So they have that information in a few different ways. And that also examined the change in canopy over the course of about 2008 to 2018. And as Hannah pointed out, there was a decrease in that 10-year span, with it sitting at 38% in 2018. In addition to that higher level canopy assessment report, they were also tasked at going around and actually counting, measuring, identifying different trees that are considered city trees. So those both are trees that are within our various parks properties, but also trees along the street and within the public right of way. And so this gave us a little bit more information about, you know, what species do we have? How big are these trees? We also got information about the condition of them, maybe their need for removal. And we also got areas that were deemed as vacant planting sites for potential new trees to go in, using kind of above ground considerations. Simply, is there a space? Is there overhead lines? At that time, we did not look at below ground considerations such as underground utilities or things like that. The inventory is actually hosted publicly on a public facing website that anyone can go and explore, and you can actually look up individual addresses, click on specific trees and figure out, you know, what species it is, the size of it. Also on here, we have a memorial tree program that the parks host where people will purchase trees and memorial plaques. All those trees are actually in here as well with pictures of those plaques. So this is a great resource if you're walking down the street and you're curious about what a species is and you kind of want to know, you can go onto our Tree Keeper website and search that address and figure out what that tree is. Or also if you have a question on, is this a city tree? This is a really great website to figure that out, because if it's along the street, typically, or it should be located in this inventory. I won't say that every single tree in here is every single tree that's considered a city tree. I know there's a lot of alleyways and other things that we weren't able to include as part of this inventory, but there's about 20,000 trees that are included as part of this inventory. So the Urban Forestry Program is located within the Parks and Recreation Department under our Operations Division. It's a pretty small program. It consists of three full-time staff, myself, the urban forester, and two working foreperson and a laborer who conduct the bulk of our work. And we have three seasonal staff during the summer periods. Additionally, there is a kind of as needed tree removal crew that operates out of the Streets Department and Public Works. And this is a crew that just does removals for trees that when I get a complaint, I go out, deem it's a hazard tree needs removal and send it on to them. But this is also the same crew that switches over to leafing, switches over to snowing, snow plowing. So it's a pretty small crew overall in the city that manages those 20,000 or so trees. So when I say street trees, I'm talking about not necessarily just trees that are located in your designated planting strip, but also trees that are just within city maintained street public right of way. Sorry, jumping ahead here. This is a good image that I've used before that kind of dictates what this means, because a lot of people would be surprised as to what actually might be a city tree. And therefore, say you need help with removal or you need help with something else. If it's a city tree, that might be something that we're able to assist with. So there's neighborhoods that don't necessarily have a sidewalk, but there still might be some public right-of-way. And if there is a tree located in that area, that's actually considered a city tree. These will be typically included in that public-facing inventory. The type of work and management that we do for these city trees consists of removals, and these are removals based on hazard. Is this a tree that causes a safety concern? That's conducted by either those in-house crews or by private contractors. We also conduct pruning on an as-needed basis. Since we do have limited staff and limited funding, this is typically for clearance for vehicle and pedestrian traffic, but we do try and prune trees for some regular maintenance as well. Thus far this year, we pruned about 350 trees, and that's usually limited to the spring and kind of winter season rather than right dead in the middle of summer where it's a little too hot and causes a little bit too much stress for those trees. We also conduct pest treatment. So every year we treat ash trees that are still located in the city for emerald ash borer. And these are done on a rotating basis where every tree is treated about every 3 years. And we've done this for about the last 8 years or so. We do conduct some other treatments as needed, just depending on the level of insect or pest pressure, maybe where those trees are. Is it a lot of trees? So we do have those sorts of pest treatment come up every once in a while, and it just kind of depends. Lastly, we also do conduct planting. A vast majority of this is replanting for removed trees. We do have a lot of trees for such a small amount of space here in the city. So a lot of times it's a kind of catch-up game. As we remove a tree, we're also planting a new tree. This year, there seems to be a lot of things in the news, a lot of things talked about in regards to urban forestry. And these are, I would say, the most asked about topics this year. One is our bicentennial bond funded tree planting, and two is Bradford pears. So the city has about 1,200 Bradford pears located within public right-of-way that are considered city trees. Because of how much money we have and how much time we have, our removal of these pears right now is restricted to safety reasons. So trees that are considered, they might fall over, they might hurt someone's car, might injure someone, which is what we typically limit our other tree removals to as well. Homeowners that have city trees that say want to remove those pears, want to remove a city tree in front of their home, can apply and remove pears at their own expense by submitting a tree work permit. However, we are in the planning process to start having more of a systematic removal and replacement of those city pears over about a 10-year span in 2023. This is included as part of our strategic action items for parks. And this removal is going to be prioritized based on various environmental considerations, such as proximity to environmentally sensitive areas, proximity to parks areas, proximity to other kind of open spaces, things that maybe we want to be mindful of in terms of the spread of these pears. Some considerations when you're removing a tree, but also if you're removing a pear, is can you put a tree back in this location? A lot of people would be surprised to find that just because a tree was somewhere, you know, planted there 20 years ago, there might now be water lines, there might now be gas lines, there might be new infrastructure or infrastructure that these trees are planted on top of. And then this space might not be the best spot to put a new tree, considering all those new constrictions to that site. In terms of replacing a pear tree, we're obviously not planting more. There are some permitted street tree species. These are listed in the Unified Development Ordinance. This list is just, here's a big old list of the various street tree species you can plant, but obviously every tree species isn't best for every site. So there are considerations that we, the city, take into account, but also homeowners might want to take into account, such as the amount of growing space available, how wide is your tree lawn? If it's a 5-foot tree lawn, maybe a Baroque is not appropriate. Light, soil, kind of things like traffic flow, visibility for your driveway. Those are all limitations that should be taken into account whenever you're planting a tree. Speaking of planting trees, right now we are in the middle of a bicentennial bond funded tree planting. This was bond money designated in 2018, along with a bunch of other projects. About $800,000 was designated specifically for city street tree planting. Using the 2019 inventory data of vacant sites, we then use this to kind of identify and prioritize where new trees might go, considering some of the environmental equity considerations that Hannah talked about during her presentations. As part of this, we came up with four broad areas to prioritize this initial phase of planting using these funds. This is in the Green Acres neighborhood is project area one that's actually been planted out. We are planting out this spring and this fall in these four areas, with project area one and project area two being the areas that have been planted out this spring. We did send postcards to most of these neighborhoods. I think we sent a little under 3,000 postcards for a little under 200 planting addresses. And we had some online meetings in regards to this project as well, and offered a feedback form online for people to place objections, species preferences. A common concern was solar panels and trees and that potential conflict there. Balancing those two wants and those two needs here in the city. As I mentioned, we are currently in the spring 2022 planting phase. So far, we've planted about 73 trees. We're set to have one more day of planting with it turning hot, and then that'll be it until the fall of 2022. These are being contracted out, and in addition to simply the planting of the trees, these trees, are going to have the contractor do two follow-up visits as well to examine the trees for their condition, adjust hardware as needed, and to conduct some initial young tree pruning. Again, as Hannah mentioned, a lot of times when it comes to tree care, getting that tree when it's young and being able to prune it when it's young is really important and reduces the cost and increases the likelihood of that tree being successful in the future by getting rid of things like competing stems where maybe the tree doesn't have one nice central trunk it wants to branch out, making sure that it has form that's really strong and appropriate for a street tree. So those are the two projects and two topics that I've been asked a lot about this year that urban forestry is trying to figure out, working through, actively working on. My last slide is essentially to address some of the common questions I get about private trees. And I think we kind of touch on those things that restrict private tree removal, which is the tree preservation easements, some of the other environmental easements such as karst or whatever the other environmental easement designations are. And some of the historic districts do have rules pertaining to trees. I would urge people, if they're thinking about removing a large mature tree on their property, to one, confirm if it's actually on their property using tools such as Monroe County's Elevate website, which actually you can look up your address, look up your parcel data, look up the associated plat maps. It's a really great tool to use to kind of figure out, you know, where actually is my property, maybe where's the city right of way, where's my neighbor's property. And then also making sure that you're hiring a tree-specific professional, an arborist, to examine that tree and determine if it's dangerous or not. A lot of times people think a tree is maybe going to fall over when actually it's a perfectly healthy tree. It just seems much larger and scarier than they'd want near their home. So I would definitely urge people to seek out an arborist if you're considering any sort of tree removal. And those are all the kind of topics I have to talk about today. I'm happy to answer questions on whatever tree concerns that you have.
Erin, thanks so much. I'm wondering if you could also put in the URL for that tree keeper. I didn't quite get it. I think it was like BloomingtonIN.
Yes, I can throw that in the
software.
I can throw that in the chat and I can email you the presentation, which has that in the presentation.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, I would like to see both presentations. So, I mean, we have this whole thing on video, but the presentations themselves, I would like to go back through them.
We can send them to Cynthia.
That'd be great.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
I have a quick question, Erin. I was at Southeast Park and one of the people, it wasn't you, so I don't know if it was who it was in the report, was putting in some new trees or they were cutting off the roots. So I was just asking, hey, what are you doing? And then I was asking, well, gosh, the trees, why do you plant so close together? And he was saying, well, some of those are shrubs, see that one, you know, and that was really interesting. But then he said something that so I don't know if this is true, but what he said was, in 3 years, they only expect that 30% of the trees will still be alive. And then that was making me wonder, like, holy cow, I mean, is there a way for like the neighborhood to better take care of those trees so they can live? Or
so if it was within Southeast Park, this might have been an area that's more meant for reforestation. And as Hannah was talking about earlier about a lot of areas that do reforestation, they're planting, say, saplings rather than larger trees.
Exactly. Yeah.
There is a much lower rate of survivorship, and that is kind of calculated into the density you're often planting when you're doing reforestation or you're doing smaller kind of cluster planting. And the acceptable rate of survivorship is much lower than the acceptable rate of survivorship for a street tree. I would say that is not the expected rate of survivorship when we're planting trees along the street. Typically, we plant trees that are about 1 to 2.5 inches in diameter of the trunk. So these are trees that are already quite mature. So we're not expecting as much pressure from, say, deer grazing or other things like that. So you don't have the expectation of, you know, as much dying. That being said, every year we do have trees that simply do not transplant well for whatever reason. But I would say ours is probably closer to 80, 90% of survivorship.
Other questions? I'll try to be better about seeing hands.
I can circle back to John's question about the overlap between the city's bicentennial bond project and our residential plantings. So just to give you, I don't know that I mentioned that we're a really, really new organization. So while we had intended to kind of parallel better with the city's initiatives, we ended up only doing a planting in Maple Heights, which was in one of the project areas that the city indicated. But going forward, so we have very similar ways of identifying the neighborhoods that we want to plant it based off of that American Forestry Equity Tool, which I know Aaron also used to identify the project areas. So going forward, a lot of the neighborhoods that we will be planting in, that we're prioritizing and planting in, will be within those project areas, just because we have similar ways of analyzing the data and choosing where we plant trees. But our Maple Heights project was in the project area, or one of the project areas of our bicentennial bond fund plantings.
I'm not letting you stop him.
Hold on. Come on.
Aaron, I have a question about, well, there's this delay of removing Bradford pears on the city property just because you're waiting for some funds to kick in and things like that. But it strikes me that the Bradford pears, as they go through the season, are producing fruit and seeds, which are going to be eaten and then distributed again. They're sort of notorious for their growth. It just really takes off. Is there a way to that neighborhoods or citizens can get in there and, I don't know, do some pear picking? Is there a way to prevent this kind of thing?
So we don't have any sort of active program to prevent their spread besides trying to start systematically removing and replacing them. Individuals are always welcome to clean up after the pears if they want, but we don't have any sort of set program in place right now for that. I will say I have had this year quite a few people who have chosen, instead of delaying and waiting, to at their own expense remove and replace those pears. But as I mentioned, we are wanting to start systematically doing this, but it wouldn't be until next year, and it will be a bit of a slow process because anticipate it's going to be about 120 trees per year, even at a 10-year rate, and that's quite a bit of money, both in terms of the removals themselves and the cost for new trees. And so we also have to be a bit diplomatic about it and smart about it, because removing 120 trees or 1200 trees can be a big dip in that canopy cover, because we're not just talking about, you know, you're removing a 3-inch tree and replacing a 3-inch tree. You know, when I say 3-inch, I mean in terms of diameter. You know, these trees have matured. So sometimes you're talking about removing a 12-inch tree, a 15-inch tree, and replacing it with a 3-inch tree. So we kind of have to think about not just a one-for-one, but a little bit about that diameter by diameter rate as well when we're thinking about replacement too.
But these pear trees are so fragile. I mean, they used to be planted right along. My office was in the auditorium building and at IU, and they used to have a whole bunch of Bradford pears before IU just basically went in and ripped them all out. And almost every winter, there would be two or three of them that would, with a heavy snowfall, they would just split and fall onto walkways. And they were ugly and a mess. And it's like it can be, they could prove to be hazardous, it seems to me, you know.
So I would say, even without systematic removal, simply because they're pears, the pear tree is one of our most commonly removed tree, because they do have some characteristics that can make them more prone to becoming a safety concern. So even without setting aside funds just for pear removal. I would say we remove about 30 or so pears each tree just for safety reasons, along with various other tree species that are maybe some of our top contenders in terms of poor performance as they get older. But right now we're only limited to how much money we can use for removing safety reasons.
Sure.
But presumably the ones that are like were planted in the parks or on trees, I mean, they were planted by the city, I assume. Sorry.
Yeah, so it's kind of funny. You see this in various other communities with various other trees. There's always this one tree that was the tree that everyone loved. And it was purported to be super great in terms of performance. In the case of the pears, one of its claims was that it was actually meant to be sterile, but then a bunch of different cultivars were being created. And because then you were increasing that diversity, you started to allow for a hybridization, which created the pears to no longer be sterile. But for much of the same reasons that they were desirable, now 20, 30 years later, they have seen the negative characteristics associated with that. But it's interesting because you see the same story with just in different places with different trees, where you had the tree of the year, and then now you're seeing maybe weak form, prone to invasive nature, things like that.
I was glad that you brought up about, and I don't know if it was Aaron or Hannah or both, about sort of the tension between solar and trees. And I also think that between the urge for increased density. So it seems like if you have housing that takes up most of a lot, I'm not sure where the trees go. So I just always wonder, like, does the city have like a vision board or like a thing of like how things work? Because so many of the ideas seem, I guess attention is a better word. I always seem like think of them as kind of competing, and I don't know if there's any comments on that. That's not actually a question.
I can't really speak to that other than, you know, most of our programming is directed by things like our comprehensive plan, things like some of those larger overarching kind of vision-based plans. And that's usually then trickled down to how do we operate on a day-to-day basis. I think Steve has a question.
Yes. Can you hear me okay? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, first of all, I just wanted to say thank you for noting that the future is changing fast as far as this thing goes. You know, I'm a big fan of trees and the arborists that work out there protecting the canopy. One question is, can we plant economically through neighborhood associations? And the reason I brought that up is probably about 5 or 6 years ago, there was someone here from Purdue that donated a number of saplings to my neighborhood association for us to plant. And maybe they donated to other associations as well. Do you know anything about that?
I can't really speak to anything like that. I know there's a variety of organizations that often will give out saplings and things like that. But okay. I don't know about that particular initiative.
Okay. Well, you know, the reason I asked that question is because, you know, we read early in the year about the amount of money of the bond to plant the trees and everything. And it was kind of like a lot of money. And then it came out that it was 304 trees or whatever. And a lot of people were really upset about the amount of money being spent on that. And not that I want to cut back on it by any means, but I'm just thinking that and then more information came out after that that made it a more appeasable for sure, that the money was being spent for this year and then next year more money will be spent from that bond and things like that. But I'm just wondering if there's a way to plant more economically through the neighborhood associations. To me, I mean, from my own neighborhood association, you know, if something was available for us to apply for and say we could apply for 100 trees in our neighborhood association, and the actual people in the neighborhood went out and planted those trees, we could do it more economically. And these would be the people that could, like what you were saying earlier, that not all these trees survive. Not all of them are kept up properly and things like that. So these people that actually planted the trees would be able to observe them on a daily basis and see that, you know, they're getting what they need. And if they're not doing well, contact you and let you know.
Steve, are you talking about something on a like a city tree plot or in somebody's backyard or where?
No, I'm talking about street trees, mm-hmm. or in somebody's front yard, backyard, whatever the case may be.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because as I understand it, that's the way these trees were plotted. They were not necessarily street trees. They were not necessarily a front yard or backyard or whatever. Aaron and Hannah, am I correct in that?
In regards to the bicentennial bond funding?
Well, yes, I suppose that would be the correct way to address it.
So my understanding is that the funding was specifically for street trees, which is why we're targeting street trees. In terms of economics, one of the benefits of doing it the way that we are doing it is, one, we're kind of meeting the minimum size of trees that we want planted. We don't actually really want saplings planted because of that low survivorship. We want a certain size of tree planted. Two, we're utilizing people that are professional arborists that specialize in tree care and tree planting to plant them. So that kind of further increases that survivorship and that health of that tree. And then, as I mentioned, lumped in with the kind of per tree cost that we're getting with this planting is actually some aftercare visits as well, to include kind of that care that oftentimes our trees maybe can't fit in. And in addition, these are also being watered over summer as well. So from my point of view, going this way is actually the most economical, just because we are ensuring that our investment is actually going to be fruitful.
That is an excellent way to explain it. And I agree with you 100%. I'm sure in many cases, those trees could be planted and ignored for the rest of their life. I did work on a tree lamp planting project in the Trailview neighborhood a couple of years ago. And those trees are doing really, really well. And that was all planted through volunteer labor and things like that. I don't know who paid for the trees or anything like that. I was just asked to participate in that. And I'm through there quite often, and the trees look great. But to have that opportunity for a neighborhood association, I think might be a good thing to do. I understand what you're saying, you know, to have an arborist actually plant the trees. I mean, that would like having the right doctor do your surgery or something like that. So I'm all in on that. But it just seems like we could plant more trees per dollar and gain ownership from the people that have those trees if we were to pull them in on the deal instead of saying we're going to send so-and-so over there to plant a tree, you know?
Yeah, and I think these are important conversations to have too, especially with Canopy being as new as an organization as we are. Like, hearing feedback like this kind of can prompt us to have conversations with the city to see, you know, ways that we can collaborate and bring in more community partners like neighborhood associations. So, you know, these are conversations that we could develop, you know, with Aaron Parks and Rec going forward, of ways that we can get people more involved in tree planting and tree care. So yeah, it's good to know that there's some interest there.
Also, well, Aaron,
you want somebody to come in, okay? Because I love trees.
So Aaron, A-R-A-N, has had her hand up very patiently. So,
Yeah, I just had a question. I would really love some feedback on maybe the best way to go about this. We are very similar to what actually we're just talking about. You know, our neighborhood association, I'm on the board, and you know, we're very low in funds, and we have had all these expenses. We have several pine trees that are right over new roofs that are already breaking down the roofs, that we're going to have to probably end up taking some of them down because they're just too close and damaging the buildings. But we, on Arbor Day, we had a committee that saw the like free trees that are being given away, and got the whole neighborhood to get together, and a bunch of people went and picked up trees. So we have 20 trees that we're going to be planting, hopefully at our cleanup day in June. And we have someone in our neighborhood that's very knowledgeable, that's trying to kind of help guide us on this. And that's why I asked the question too about the lines, making sure we're planting the right place, and you know, talking about getting the rabbit netting or fencing or whatever that we're gonna put around the trees. And if there's any advice for like when we're doing this, we particularly focused in on, you know, obviously non-invasive, but trees that didn't get too tall, because that's kind of one of the issues we have with the common areas we have in what's more apartment style buildings than houses. So we have some areas where we have more room where we can plant trees, or maybe the tree line around all the units, but we've had some trouble with trees being too close to buildings. And that's why we're trying to kind of target smaller trees, but just putting this all together has been a little daunting. So if there's any advice for when we actually go to do this, I want it to be very, very accessible. And our buildings and grounds committee is really excited about it. I don't want to take out trees. It's not my goal, but I want to, if we have to, because of building concerns, to be replacing trees. And actually I want it to be something that we're doing every year, which is adding more trees, no matter what. Even if we don't have to take any trees down next year, I want us to be adding trees every year. So if there's any advice on like the best way to do this, because it's brand new and there's like no roadmap for us.
Yeah, I would say the city actually has a tree manual that has a lot of resources on kind of planting, caring for trees, along with some species lists as well. And that's something that I would take a look at. In regards to the pines, pines right now, not just here in Indiana, but here in Indiana, are kind of generally experiencing a decline for various reasons. The most cited reason is essentially climate change. So pines are something that we're not really going to see doing well planted into the future. So I'm not surprised that you're seeing decline right now. There's a term, they literally call it white pine decline. And it's happening here in Indiana, and I see it quite a few of our pines. I think that considerations you'd want to take into account would honestly be distances from your various utilities, from your buildings, also from things that could cause line of sight concerns. The Arbor Day Foundation has a lot of good resources for tree owners as well about this, which if you want to reach out to me after via email or give me a call, I can send you some of those resources on kind of how best to site and locate trees. The location also can vary depending on the species of tree, because different trees have different considerations, whether it be soil moisture or light or growing space. So depending on the type of trees, you might want to site them differently on your property. And you could also maybe even increase the density of your trees by knowing which ones can actually go underneath some of your larger shade trees as well. So if you just want to follow up, I can email you some various resources that can help out.
And we can help as well. This is something that we'd like to kind of expand our resources to accommodate, like doing site visits for people who are wanting to plant trees on their own. So that's something you can reach out to us as well. You know, I'd be happy to come out there and help pick sites or, you know, help with the planting day itself. If the trees are obviously going on private property, that's something that we'd like to help with. So you can feel free to reach out to us through our website or through the hello@canopybloomington email.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, we'd be really happy to do that.
And I had put their email in the chat a bit ago, so it's in there, Aaron.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
And these things that you're going to send out to various folks, if you could send that to also to the CONA email site, I think we would like seeing that for anybody that couldn't attend tonight, but might want some information on that.
So, John, is your hand not up anymore?
It's not, but I will go ahead and make a comment. So I think what I hear here is there really is not much of a connection between this organization and the city, other than the fact that there's a person who is the urban tree, the new Lee Huss, who happens to be on the board of this organization. Is that correct?
So we do have a partnership agreement with the city. We have an earlier partnership that we signed last September that allows us to do joint planting and education projects with the city. We did do one collaboration planting back in October in the Matlock Heights neighborhood that Aaron invited us to do, so that planting event looked like the city planting in the right of way while we planted on residential properties. That's something I think we'll be exploring further as our organization grows and is able to accommodate more frequent plantings. But then additionally, we're partnering with the city on our Youth Tree Tenders program. So we'll be doing tree work in the Switchyard Park through that program in collaboration with the city. So as our organization grows, I see more connections that we can create with the city to, you know, further like goals. It's just, we're kind of getting our roots in the ground as an organization. So as we have, you know, as we grow our capacity, we'll be able to do more things within the city.
Good. Then this is not the place to ask questions about the city's tree planting project, correct?
So Aaron is the city. Yeah. So Aaron's the urban forester for the city of Bloomington, and I'm the forestry director of Canopy Bloomington. So Aaron will be your person to ask any city related questions, city tree related questions.
It's a nice time for that, right?
Yeah, you can.
Why not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Aaron can answer any questions that you have.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then I'll throw this out. I've heard from a few people that they have found out that a tree is going to be planted in their front yard, and they didn't want the tree planted in their front yard. And they were told that, well, you need to file a complaint if you don't want that in your yard. And then they were told that, but we'll come back next year and you'll have to file the same complaint again next year. And so I wonder I'd like to hear your response to that.
Yeah, so essentially we're planting street trees, and those include areas that maybe don't have a designated tree lawn but are still within the public right of way. We sent notifications out via postcard, postings on Nextdoor, but we called a few neighborhood associations as well. And then we did have an online feedback form where people could submit their objections to those tree plantings. And for the most part, if people submitted those objections, we honored those. And some of those were just, I don't want a tree, but some of those were also species preferences and things like that. So people were able to submit objections that way. After a certain date though, there was a deadline associated with that. So if people were not able to accommodate that deadline and say the tree was already there, we weren't able to basically unplant that tree.
No, I mean, yes, great. But what I heard was that, yes, you can file a complaint, register a complaint. And if we agree, we won't plant it. But because we have located this tree to be in this spot, next year, we'll do the exact same thing. And we're going to go through with the process of planting a tree in this spot. And if you don't want it there next year, you'll have to file the complaint again.
We don't currently have plans to re-examine the same neighborhoods that we've been planting out.
Okay. Well,
I've got a question.
So my spouse, this is a two-party house. So
So I'd love to talk to you guys, particularly Aaron, about the selection for the neighborhoods. In Bryan Park, yes, I live with John. In Bryan Park, we have a lot of trees that are really dying. A lot of silver maples that are over 100 years old. We've had to take out some that are, we've had to take out, let's see, one, two, we've had to take out three.
Yeah. Large.
That are maybe 5-6 feet in diameter. I mean, they're huge. It breaks my heart. And I wonder, and this is happening all over our neighborhood, and I'm wondering if there are any plans. We don't have any sidewalks in the neighborhood. Most of our yards are tethered to the street, which that's a pretty amorphic shape because we have no curbs or gutters as well. So anyway, I'm just wondering if there's any, are there's any plans to look at these older neighborhoods and start replacing. I know that in the near west side got a lot of street trees this year. So I wonder, Aaron, if you could talk a little bit about that in relation to all these absolutely, you know, huge, but, you know, stupid silver maples that we're having to take. It breaks my heart.
Well, I will say, in addition to Bradford pears, silver maple is a really common tree that we remove just because after they reach a certain age, they do have some issues just because they also grow pretty fast. This planting utilizing the bicentennial funds is actually separate than our just regular annual tree planting program. So not speaking to these older neighborhoods, but as a generality, for trees that say the city removes for hazard reasons, et cetera, we do attempt to replant those. In terms of expanding this project, there are plans to expand this project and utilize the rest of the funding. I can't say right now where that will be looked at because that's still going to be based on where we have vacant sites identified that are within the public right of way and the kind of other considerations that we took into account and kind of going down the list. We don't have those neighborhoods picked out yet. We're trying to kind of figure out this first phase and see how it went, maybe ways in which, you know, we can change it in whatever ways. So I don't have areas picked out right now. That being said, we do plan to continue to utilize these funds in different parts of the city based on kind of prioritization of need.
Mm-hmm. Wait, John.
I just turned you on.
Oh, okay. So part two of this. First, there's a sidebar here that you might be interested in just because you're an arborist. When the neighborhood was platted, it looks to me like 100 years ago or so, 110 years ago, they put a silver maple at the intersection of every single lot. It's really interesting. If you look at the overhead, you can see silver maples, and they're all just like, blah, dying. Mm-hmm. But I was wondering also, you're talking about putting trees in the parks. The south side of Bryan Park is blazing hot in the summer. And I would like to just offer that up because, you know, it's a nice trail around the park, but that side of the park, there are no lovely trees there to give you shelter and shade, which is a shame. So that's it.
I'm sure that you're aware living in Bryan Park, but we are right now doing a trail repaving project, which did involve some tree removals with some happening on that south side of the trail. And I actually already have at least one or two trees slated to go back in on that south trail this year.
Great to hear. And I hope they're big shade trees and not stupid little, you know,
Bradford pears.
Thank you very much.
Natalia, you have a question?
Yes, I have a really quick question. I know our meeting's going long already. So I'm Near West Side, member of the Near West Side at large, and our neighborhood association our neighborhood is applying to go for historical status. And just so I don't misquote, so I know we have some people from the city on and then some people who are very involved with the HPC. Is there a benefit for what Elm Heights does in terms of with the tree designate, you know, like to have tree protection in there. I know we briefly touched on that earlier, but I was unclear. So when I write a little letter to my neighborhood association members that could make it, I just didn't want to misquote us. Can anyone speak to that if there was any benefit? Because it sounded like Elm Heights was the only neighborhood that does have that protection. I see Jan's hand up.
I can speak a little bit to that because I sat in on the Elm Heights. I really worked to get Elm Heights neighborhood as a full historic preservation district. And one of the things that was cited, I mean, it's like page one, paragraph one, sentence two. And it talked about how magnificent the tree canopy is in Elm Heights. And it said, Elm is as important to the character of the neighborhood. It's a spectacular tree canopy. And so that was one of the reasons, is because it is truly spectacular. And so it was embedded in that as a way of preserving. Somebody's got a pooch there. It was a way of preserving and sort of like codifying a respect for that amazing tree canopy. And yes, there were a lot of questions about cutting down trees for solar. And, you know, it's okay. It's okay to do that. It's a heartbreaker when you've got a magnificent tree. But, you know, yeah.
Okay. I'll have, if you don't mind, I'll have my neighborhood reach out to you. Because we have to draft stuff soon. So about this. Okay. So this is helpful for us. So thank you.
Go ahead, John.
I just want to tell Natalia. Natalia, I'm going to send you Elm Heights tree clause, so to speak. That way, you know. So just consider there are provisions. There's a distinction if a tree is in good shape, or if it's diseased or dying or in poor condition, and what would require review by the HBC. So some of those distinctions are important. So I'll send that to you in case that's helpful as you all are looking at that. So thanks.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you. Thank you both.
Thanks, John. Liz, thank you for being so patient.
Okay. Can I speak now?
Yeah.
Okay. As one of the founders of our historic district and originally conservation district, we chose not to include vegetation in with our guidelines because we left it up to the homeowners to decide on what they wanted to do. Plus, in recognition of McDowell Gardens having small lots, the tree canopy, yes, it's important for aesthetics purposes, but we also want people to live in their homes. And if part of living in your home is allowing solar access, we don't want to stop that by preserving trees where a homeowner would have to sell their house because they couldn't take down trees. So I just thought I would let you know our guidelines are a little easier on a lot of things, but this is the main reason why we chose the way we chose. Yes, tree canopy is important, but we don't want to restrict homeowners if they want to put in solar about the tree cover. That's all I need to say.
Thanks, Liz. Well, I think that's a really good meeting. And if people can send the presentations, I don't want to keep too long. After this part of the meeting, we have our regular small CONA meeting. So I uploaded the treasurer's report and we'll vote to approve that. And as well with the April meeting minutes, but I wanted to thank Aaron and Hannah very much for the presentation and sharing all the information. And hopefully, you know, Canopy Bloomington can help get in contact with some neighborhood associations. Tom, did you have your hand up too again? You're muted.
I see.
Applauding. Yeah, thank you so much for inviting us to this Kona meeting. We've been meaning to get in touch with you all for a while now, so I'm glad to make your acquaintance.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for being here. And this is the first meeting we've had with guest speakers where we didn't have follow-up questions. So thank you very much for informing everybody on the call about what we were talking about.
So Liz, did you have any comments on the treasurer's report?
No, and I forgot to take my hand down.
I know, I see that.
There you go.
Is there a motion to approve the treasurer's report?
I so move.
Is there a second? Thanks, Nancy. Do we vote to approve them? I'm voting to approve them.
Oh.
Okay. So they're approved. Similarly, the Kona April meeting. So what we're trying to do is if you are at the April meeting, then to vote to approve the minutes. So I don't have a list. Some people I remember were there though. So is there a motion to approve, or are there any corrections or suggestions about the minutes? Is there a motion to approve?
I move to approve the minutes.
Oh, thanks, Liz. Is there a second? Is that Kathy? Okay.
Yeah.
Is there a vote to approve? Not is there, to vote to approve? Okay, so approved.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much. I think this is going to conclude our, unless John still wants to make a small announcement. I guess there's time since he stayed on the call if he wanted to, but anyway. Okay, so next month, hopefully we're having information from Mary Catherine Carmichael about the Hopewell Project, which I hear is moving forward and
John Zodi, who's also on this call, is always my partner in crime when we talk about Hopewell. So he's going to be part of it, too. I hope that's okay with everybody.
Yeah, that's great.
Absolutely. It's awesome. Can't wait to hear about it.
Thank you.
Well, thanks so much to everybody. I guess I will stop the recording.
Cynthia, this is a great meeting. I really learned a lot about trees. And I thought the interaction between the two presenters and the audience was wonderful. I was really pleased and learned a lot. As I said, I think it's a very worthwhile meeting. So thank you all for being so good.
I'll stop. Here we go. Stop recording.
Thank you.